Blog Talk Radio.
I'm looking for a reason, roaming through the night to find my place in this world, my place in this world.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in internet land. This is John Stanko, as the man said, and I am your guide from the side, your facilitator for the next 60 minutes as we talk today to another inspiring guest, one of my favorite people, Pastor Earlene Coleman, who is waiting in the wings, and we'll bring her on in a moment and talk to her about life and ministry and purpose. And I've had the privilege of being in Pastor Earlene's church on several occasions. I know a lot of the members in her congregation. I feel right at home when I am there, and we're going to make her feel right at home on Wake Up to Purpose as we talk about various subjects. You know, I've said in the past, I really don't prepare my guests. Most of them I have a relationship with, so this would be no different than me running into them in the mall, or maybe we were in a Starbucks together and having a coffee, and we just talk, and we let you listen in. And that has worked very well over the years, and that has worked very well this year. I have started back up this blog radio, which is really just a variation on a podcast, but I like it because it's connected to a network. When I put my tag words in the show, just like you would with a blog written entry, people who are searching for that tag topic can find the show. And it has slowed down of late because the world has picked up a little bit more of some normal activity. But I think the last count, I was at about 40 nations that have had people listen into one or more of the shows. And that used to be my Saturday activity during the real serious lockdown time, was to take a screenshot of the map from Blog Talk Radio and put it on Facebook and share with everybody the new nations that had been added that week. And it was just kind of a silly little game, but it would be an encouragement as well, because as I have told people many times, produce something and give it to God and let him use it. He may not, he may. And so what I've tried to do is present some what I consider to be significant people that I would like to put before my world, and let God take care of the rest. And so there was about a four-week period recently where I did not do any radio, but then I would still look at the daily. I said, Lord, I'm putting this all in. All this, I've got about 75 shows that I've done this year. I'm putting them all in your hands. And every day I'd look, and there were five people the day before who had listened, two people, seven people, 10 people. I didn't know who they were. I wouldn't even publicize any of the older shows on Facebook or other social media, but people were finding them. And so that's my objective, is just to put those things out there that God can use and put into the hands of somebody. And this may be a romantic idea or vision I have of somebody, 2 o'clock in the morning, can't sleep, they somehow find one of the shows, they listen, and their life has changed. And that's the same thing with publishing. And we're going to talk to Pastor Earlene a little bit about her book, God Will Do It. And but, you know, I just shared on Facebook Live that over the weekend, I Friday night had a Zoom meeting with a pastor in Australia for whom I am doing a book. And Saturday morning, I had an appointment with a Zoom appointment with a Zimbabwean, a young lady who lives in London, and we're doing a book for her. And then I've been going back and forth with a pastor who is also a member of parliament in South Africa. We've almost had his book done, and then the pandemic hit, and of course South Africa's was hit pretty hard, and so as a member of Parliament, he was very busy. But we've picked up again, and I hope next Tuesday we can have a couple-hour session on the phone and record everything we need to record and get that book done for him. But I thought, wow. That's three continents, and then my Life is a Gold Mine is being translated in Spanish. It's been translated. We're proofing it, and I've sent them two other manuscripts in Colombia to translate, and so that's a fourth continent. And then, of course, we have North America. Tonight I'll be with a gentleman who is into all kinds of alternative medicines. It's really been interesting to hear some of his stories and what he's doing, so we'll be sitting down tonight. Tonight, starting to work. We'll have a second session for his manuscript. So that is that's some of what I have been involved with over in this season, as well as continuing to write my own things. I wrote the Monday Memo, which is I'm doing an Unlocking the Power of Your Thinking series. I just finished and sent off my Christmas devotional that I have wanted to do for years and finally pulled it all together. And then I also have Proverbs 31 Men and also the Leader's Model in production, ready to be soon, by the end of the year, be released. So anyway, that's why do I share all that? I share that to encourage you to do what's in your heart to do and to find ways to do a little bit more than what you have been doing. Because my theory is in my own life is that I am not so much underliving my potential, but I don't know what my potential is until I start to pursue it. And I don't know how high I can jump until I set the bar at a height that I don't think is possible. And once I clear that height, then let's set the bar a little higher and see what the maximum potential that I can reach. And I want to encourage you to do the same thing. And that's why this show is called Wake Up to Purpose. And I want to wake you up to the power of purpose in your life. But without further ado, let me bring my guest on for today, Pastor Earlene Coleman. Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stanko. It's wonderful to be here with you today. This is wonderful, and I was enjoying listening your opening and talking about the things that you're doing, and you're still doing all of those great things that you were doing before. Sometimes we get so busy going in different directions, mm-hmm. we don't get a chance to talk and to hear, so it was good to hear those things today.
Well, thank you. You're always such a blessing and encouragement, and you really always do bring a smile to my face. And it's, you know, one of the things of the pandemic is we just don't have a chance to see one another or run into one another as we probably would. So this show has also given me an opportunity to have a chance to connect with people who have been and are special in my life. So thanks for taking the time. Today, tell our listeners a little bit about you, who you are, what occupies your time these days, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Well, I am Pastor Earlene Coleman. I pastor the Bethlehem Baptist Church here in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. I have been pastoring in June. It was 17 years I've been pastoring mm-hmm. here, and this is also the church that I grew up in. So I've never fellowshipped or had a membership with any other church other than Bethlehem. I'm excited about being here, and I'm still doing the work that I believe that God has called me to. I believe that this is part of my purpose. I don't think it was the whole purpose, but, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes life will take those goals and those things and push them to a back burner, and I'm trying to dig them back out again, things that mm-hmm. God had laid on my heart before. I used to love to write poems, and I would write for a Christian publication we had here in McKeesport, and right. I would do the mm-hmm. poems for them, and I kept saying I was going to put them in a book. I can't even find them now. I keep trying to search mm-hmm. to see if I could find them, and had called mm-hmm. that printing place to see if they still had any of them on record, but trying to go back and find those things that I let life kind of push to the side and push down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still, as I said, working here at the church and still working in the community, still following what God told me from the beginning when he called me that I was not just the pastor inside the four walls, because my members do not live in here. They live in the community. So that I was also to be a part of the community to help make their life better out there so that they can hear better when they come in here. So still doing those kinds of things. And I don't know, just it gets to be so busy because one of the things that happens here is the funeral director here in McKeesport, anytime there is no someone that has passed away and they don't have a church or a pastor, he always calls me because he says, well, you're the only full-time pastor in the city. And that's true. Most other pastors are, you know, they're bivocational. They have another job besides. So I've been pretty busy with him for about the past 3 months.
You are the funeral pastor. You are the go-to person. We've tried to connect for the show in the past, but you know, you are always busy and you do always make yourself available. You also have a community outreach, a community building. Tell us a little bit about that. What's the status been during the pandemic?
Noah's Ark Community Center. It's been almost 10 years ago, we purchased a city block. And then as we were saying that, I said we were to have part of it to rent out, which would become money to be able to help feed into the main banquet facility that we wanted to have in the one building. All three buildings in that block are connected. And so we had someone that came along, and the name of the organization, company, whatever you want to call them, that rented out two of the buildings, they're called An Answered Prayer. And they are a home care program. And so many people are being taken care of. They've brought many jobs to the city. We have also a free computer center for anyone that wants to come in, and there's two teachers that teach that. They're online right now. They're doing the online classes because of the pandemic, but they've moved into part of the building. They're upstairs in the building where we want to put the banquet facility. And just a week ago, I received the letter from the bank saying, "Dear client, congratulations. We received the last payment on your loan." So we have paid for that entire block in full. It started out at $250,000, and to God be the glory, we never, ever missed a mortgage payment. And that's from, and that's not because somebody was giving us great big dollars, but it was the church giving this and other people saying, "I want to donate," and just donating. Sometimes some people dropping an envelope in the mailbox that had something in it and said, "This is for Noah's Ark." And we really want to be able to reach out and allow people that want to have meetings. It would be a meeting place. We'll block it off for meetings, and then also banquet facility. People won't have to travel so far. They can go right there for their wedding receptions and things like that. We do a Noah's Ark community Thanksgiving dinner, and it's free, and we do that every year. And we're looking forward to this November doing that as well. And we sent out to all of the agencies, Monyok and all of the different agencies, for them to bring their members in. We changed it. We used to do it always on a Saturday, but we found out that, you know, workers go home. They don't really want to come back on the weekend. So we changed it, and we started doing it on a Friday afternoon, and then it would be the end of their week. And then we got a lot more of the clients that were able to come in and get their free dinner. I make sure that there are members here to just go and sit at the table and talk to them. We go down to the park where there are people that just sit there, and some of the members will drive them up and tell them, "Come on up and get their dinner," and they sit. So we do that for the Noah's Ark Community Center. We've been partners with UPMC, doing community days with them, and they have been very, very gracious in helping us. They painted our building for us, and they also carpeted the building. And so it's been a great work that if anyone pays attention, it's all God. God has done it, and it's been the nickels and the dimes and the pennies that have taken care of it.
Yeah. I think, again, we're looking, so many people talk to me, we need a grant, or, you know, we need some big organization and entity behind us. And I think, you know, we just really need the Lord. and yes. God can move on one person, one organization, or he can move on a number of people to do a little bit. And it would all add up to be what it is that we need. Go back and expand a little bit more. God spoke to you to you know, don't just pastor within the walls of the church, pastor outside the church. And you just read off a litany of projects and things that you're doing. You know, how did you interpret that when you heard it? What did it mean to you? And just expand on that aspect of God's call to your life.
Well, it really opened up and allowed me to understand something that I had been doing and didn't understand. As an associate mm-hmm. minister, there were meetings that they held in the housing project to help people with different purposes, and there were different organizations that were coming in that they could ask for help. And I was attending those meetings and bringing back information to the church. If there were flyers or folders, they had a project where they were giving away the AED machines. And mm-hmm. so I went to the meeting. All you had to do was show up. So I went and showed up so that I could get one for the church. And we got that mm-hmm. for the church. And there were just other things. And I kept saying, God, why am I attending these meetings? Why am mm-hmm. I at each and every one? I became a part of the ship, which was meetings for all of the different things they were doing in the community. But realized mm-hmm. that it was for the fact that God was going to call me to pastor. And he had already put my feet in out there, and that's when he spoke to me and said that I'm not calling you just to be the pastor inside these four mm-hmm. walls. And I was able to already see the need within the community and the different things that the members needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And speaking of community, there was a pretty big event last week that got some national notoriety. Is that correct? Tell us about that.
Yes. Yes, correct. The Today Show came in and they gave laptops. It was Today Show, Dell Computers, and Comcast. And every teacher and student at our high school received a laptop. And then they said they heard about the middle school, Founders Hall, that they needed some help there as well. And so they did the same thing for them. Every teacher and every student was getting a free laptop and internet for a year.
Wow.
I don't know why they picked McKeesport, mm-hmm. but they also said that they knew that McKeesport needed some help. And yes, they did. You know, they really did need mm-hmm. that help because there were some, as a matter of fact, two of my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, were not in school because they didn't have a laptop for them yet. Mm. And so it should be okay now that, you know, this week they'll be able to get in there. And mm-hmm. then our, you know, it was just a major boost for our young people. You know, they are still sure. walking around smiling. They're still talking about, uh-huh. see, people can see that McKeesport is great. And so many of the citizens of the community are putting on Facebook saying that I hope everybody keeps this going because we needed this
right.
pump. We need, and we really uh-huh. did. We really did. And so everybody uh-huh. is still very, very excited about it.
Yeah.
Many of the students are here at the church.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and you've made a special effort within the church to encourage students, haven't you? What are some of the simple things you've done to encourage young people in your congregation?
Well, one of the things that we did is because the schools were not doing a baccalaureate service anymore, they couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We started doing that here at Bethlehem. So we do a baccalaureate service for them. Then after graduation, we have a special Sunday where they put their caps and their gowns on. And as we open up service, we have them march in. And then there's a row where they all sit. And then afterwards, mm-hmm. The students and their parents, we go downstairs and someone will give a message. I usually have one of the younger ministers give a message
mm-hmm.
to the young people. And then they give them something to eat and then we, you know, we go home. We do that for them. Then we also, at least once a year, I try to invite the police, the fire department, and all of those here. And we
mm-hmm.
honor them. But also, we go downstairs and have maybe some punch and some cookies. But we have the young people serve. I tell the adults
mm-hmm.
to stay back because I want the police to see their face in another place other than in the street. Mm-hmm. I want them to have this connection with each other. And so we've been doing that for about 10 years now. And last year, I had each of the students, they wanted to make up a certificate. And so each of the students went up and gave the certificate to the police officers. And the chief of police was here, who is the wrestling coach for the high school. And so it was real nice. It worked out. We didn't even plan it that way, but it worked out that one of his wrestlers was the one that ended up giving him his certificate.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
And you've done some other things, like to recognize your graduates in services, haven't you? Maybe giving them special recognition.
Yes. And our graduates, after they've gone off to college, and they come back after their first year, then we have a Sunday of recognition, and we give them a check. And we've started out. It started with Reverend Hayes, the pastor that I grew up under. He got $100 for Christmas present, started a scholarship fund. And so we have the J. Harold Hayes Scholarship Fund, and Harold Hayes from KDKA donates to that every year. And we have upped it now. We've gone from the $100, because when I started as pastor, I said, we can't keep giving them $100. They need a little more than that. So we started out giving them like a $500 check, and now we're up to, we're giving $700. And I told them, I said, now in 2 years, I want you to raise that to each one $1,000. So that's what we're working towards. But we keep getting these large groups, although I'm excited. You know, I think next year we might have about 10. You know, so they're looking at me saying, okay, Pastor, you told us to raise it. I said, that just means you have to work harder. That's all.
That's right. That's right. Yes, that's right.
And I'm starting in October a motivational moment. And it will be 15 minutes on Facebook on Wednesdays. And there, I have one young man who is doing an awesome job. Darius is just doing a wonderful job. And he's selling cars. And every time I look, I've got to congratulate him. Sometimes he has sold like 4 cars in a day. He called me and asked me if I knew someone that was a broker that could help him, because he wants to invest. He doesn't want to just, you know, do things foolishly. So connected him with Judge Baldwin's husband, Art Baldwin. And they said, oh, he won't be doing that long. They said if he doesn't have a string of car lots of his own, he's going to have his own business. So he's one of the ones that I want to be on there with the part of the motivational moment.
Yeah.
That young people will listen to him.
Yeah, and I know that's been on your heart for a while to, you know, to do some motivational things and inspirational things. You mentioned Judge Baldwin. Didn't I see a picture recently? Was she honored somehow? Was there a special event, or am I imagining things?
That was the judge that brought charges against her, or you know, when it was going with the Penn State, and it was found that she didn't do anything wrong. Okay, nothing. And he still felt that she needed to be reprimanded. And he was still going forward with this, but not realizing that one of the judges that he talked to came forward and said that this judge had told him he wanted to bring something against Judge Baldwin because he felt that she had a minority agenda when she was on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And so now he's under investigation. And she released the affidavit that he had put out against her. And she said that she's retired, and she said, I'm doing this for the younger ones that's coming up behind me. She said, because there's nothing left that he can do to me. But she was found that she did nothing wrong. She did exactly what she was supposed to, and he wouldn't let it go. He kept going.
Yeah, Haman kind of with Esther, you know, he just he couldn't let it go, and but it boomeranged on Haman, and it will do the same, we hope, in this situation. Great woman, great family, and it was such an honor to get to know them a little bit. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Pastor Erling Coleman, who for 17 years has been the pastor of Bethlehem Baptist Church in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. Pastor Erling, you were talking about the community and the church, but your interests even go beyond the local community. I think you have some missions involvement that you've brought the church into and that you serve in a leadership capacity. Tell our listeners a little bit about that.
That's the Lot Carey Foreign Mission Convention, very close to my heart. I love them dearly. They're in all these different foreign countries, and now I believe we're in like 26 countries, and also now in doing some great work here in the United States. I am on the board. I'm one of the members of the board of directors. I'm also on the faculty for the teaching staff when we have the convention.
Mm-hmm.
But the convention is usually a week long, and so for 4 days out of that week, I teach missions class. And it's really nice because I get to meet people from all over the place, and it was really wonderful. One elderly lady from New York, not this past year but the year before, was in my class, and she's really, really sweet. And her daughter lives in Pittsburgh, and she said to me, "I'm coming to see you." And so it was maybe about 5 or 6 months later, one of my officers came in and said, "The lady said she's from New York and she's here." So she actually did come. She got her daughter. Her daughter said that they had passed the church twice trying to find it because her daughter didn't know anything about McKeesport. She said, but my mother was determined. She said, "Oh, you're going to find it. We're going to get there." So it was really nice to see her. I was part of the Pastor's Excellence Program with the Lot Carey Foreign Mission Convention, and I was able to travel to South Africa, Johannesburg, South Africa. I went to Jamaica, West Indies, and I also went to Guyana. And we traveled for 3 years together. It was 24 pastors, and it was wonderful. And that was part of my classes where I received my certificate from Zimbabwe Seminary. And we had to do our tests, our papers, and all of that, and travel as well, and preach and teach in those countries. And then on the fourth year, we went down to North Carolina, and we went to the Duke University, and we graduated together and received our certificate there. I was very disappointed because Dr. Mugabe from Zimbabwe, he and his wife, such a wonderful, wonderful couple, and I met them through the Lot Carey, and he's over the seminary in Zimbabwe. But at the time we were supposed to go to Zimbabwe is when the civil unrest was really high, and he called 2 weeks before we were to get there, and he said they can't come in. He said, because if they come in, we don't know if we can get them back out. And so that's why we ended up going to Johannesburg. We couldn't go in. And so I really hated that, you know, because I wanted to be there where they were, as they really are just a wonderful, wonderful couple. But Lot Carey is doing some great work in so many different countries. And when we went to the different countries, sometimes, you know, we'll stay in other places. But when I was in Johannesburg, I ended up being able to, I was supposed to stay with the pastor, but his wife is from the United States, and her mom became ill, and she had to leave the country. So I stayed in a bed and breakfast not far from his house, and so they would pick me up because I was preaching at his church, and he had a son and a daughter, and it was just great to be able to be there with the pastor of the church. And then when we went to the church, and I went in, and it's been a while since I did it, but it still brings tears to my eyes. So when I went to the church, his church was just this tin building with a tin roof on it, and you know, the tin walls. And so, of course, being in South Africa, it was warm, but it was okay. And then there was a little girl when I came in. She just ran to me and put her arms around my legs because she was real little. And then I just, you know, said hi to her and grabbed her. And he looked at me and he said, "Do you know she's blind?" And I said, "No." And I thought, oh, my God, what made her come, you know what I mean, to run and hug me. And then afterwards, she's the usher. She was the usher. And so I know you know that when you're praying or doing something, people don't get up and move around. And so she would shut the door when prayer was going, and nobody was allowed to come in or go out. And she that was her job she was doing. She did her job well. And then they, before I left, they gave me a name. They gave me a hat and some other things. And they gave me a name. And I asked them afterwards, "What does that mean?" And they said, he said, "They call you Mampula." And he said, "That means fresh rain." Yeah.
Wow.
And so
I can tell it made a deep impact on you. And you've brought then the missions emphasis to the church, haven't you?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
so we send about 23 young people to the youth seminar every year. They go to the youth seminar. They stay for a week. They go to orphanages. They help to feed. They usually go to the fields and pull food for the those that are hungry. So it's not a vacation, and they're there. And we have them now. They come back from college, and they go back as junior counselors. They love it so much.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about current events. In March, we had, the world shut down. What did Bethlehem Baptist do? What did you do? What have you been doing for 6 months? And what's the foreseeable future for the church and meeting and what have you?
Well, with the march and all of those things, I was a part of the march that we had in Pittsburgh that started at the Freedom Corner and was part of the pastors that came out of that, that we had a meeting with Mayor Peduto. We had two meetings with him, and we took a letter to him saying that one of the things that I said, that we need to change the wording of what it is that we want. We do not want to defund the police. We just want a reallocation of funds. And I said, I think that's where the problem is, that people have used the wrong language in what it is that we really want. Nobody wants to be without police officers. We have to have that safety. And so we did, as we went to the mayor, we were just saying the reallocation. And I said, one of the things that happened when my children were young, that the young people could get a job in the playground. I said, we need to start the playgrounds again and let young people be able to come there to play and those kinds of things. So we met with the mayor and talked to him about that and education and housing. And so that was my part that I played. And the other part was telling my church, the congregation, to please pray for the civil unrest that we have, to please pray against the fires and the looting and all of the rest. And right now, just for the whole situation that's going on, every Wednesday I called for a fast. And I think there's about 10 churches that joined in, that we're fasting on Wednesdays about the situations that's going on. In our communities, all around, I've learned with being with Lot Carey that my community is a lot larger than I thought it was. I thought my community was just McKeesport, but I've come to learn that my community goes a lot further than that. And what we've been doing is, we haven't really been doing a lot at the church because of, the pandemic. And but this Sunday we're coming back in to the house. I wanted to watch what happened after the children went back to school. And there really hasn't been any problems since they went back to school. And so I believe that God is calling us to come back. And I was asking God, I said, God, please, I want to be sure that it's you. Please give me a sign. I said, I'm Gideon. I need a sign. And I said, let me know. So I was turning the channel on the TV later on, and I forget the gentleman's name, the one that wrote the Harbinger.
Jonathan Cain.
Yes, Jonathan Cain. He was there, and he was giving the commercial. I stopped when I saw him, and he was giving a commercial. And the commercial was for September 26th, the thing that they're doing in D.C., Return to God.
Right.
And when I stopped, he said the words, return to God. And then he started talking about the 26th. And I said, okay, I hear you, God, because on the 27th, we're returning into full fellowship. And so
did you preach during the pandemic? Did you have online services?
Yes. We had online service, and it was really nice because we had someone from Arizona that was listening.
Right.
We had someone from London that was listening. We had someone from California, and we had someone from Florida that was on watching our Facebook Live. So that was good. That was good.
Yeah, I know they were blessed. Go back and what did you say in the congregation? Did you have questions? After the George Floyd incident. This is you're not new to this kind of problem or situation in the United States. How did you respond? How did your congregation respond? What did you say? What can you say? What still needs to be said? Just address that issue for a moment.
Many of my congregation angry. I have to say that at first I was angry, and you know, when I'm watching and seeing it, but then I had to settle myself because I realized that I have a congregation that I do have to be able to deal with, so I have to let God deal with my heart. Many of them, I said, you know, what you have to do is you have to let your voice be heard. I said, I do not condone anything that's violent or any of that. I said, what I'm saying is that our silence is saying everything is okay, but we can speak up. I said, and there's a way to speak up. I said, but we have to pray and ask God to bring us to a place where we can speak civilly and we can speak intelligently. I said, because screaming and yelling at each other will get nothing done. I said, yes, what we saw, and I said to my congregation, what we saw was wrong. It was absolutely wrong. I said, but we can't deal with it by being wrong. I said, I grew up with a mother and a father who told me two wrongs never made a right. So we have to work at it in a right manner. So ours was to work in it through prayer, to continually pray, but also to begin to get out into the, I said, we have to stop saying that the church and government are separated. I said, because church was first, and government came out of church. And I said, so then we have to be able to stand up and stand for what God says in His Word and stand on those words, because those words are not going to die and they're not going to be discounted. I said, but when we sit inside the house and just feed each other and never go outside and speak the truth of God, then we're defeating our purpose. We're defeating what God said. He said, go ye therefore. He didn't say sit in the house. So there are many of my members that are now working on different committees in different places, instead of just sitting here idly and not doing anything. I said, God needs a seat at the table. And how else is He going to get a seat at the table unless you sit there?
What kind of agenda do you put forward for the Wednesday fasting? Is there one? Are you leading it? Or just talk to us a little bit more about that initiative.
The Wednesday fasting, I just kind of told, well, one young lady who's in Maryland, she inboxed me and said, Pastor, I have to eat because I have to take medicine. And then I said to her, I said, you know what, this fast is not just a fast. I said, we came out of Isaiah 58, and it's, you know, where it says, is this not the fast that I've called you to break the bands of wickedness? And I said, that's what we have to do, is we have to break the bands of wickedness that have been loosed in our, you know, in our world, not just in the United States, I said, but in our world. I said, wickedness is raising its ugly head, and that's because we have sat back and been silent. We're not doing the work that God has called us to do. His word should be being spread throughout the land. And I said, so we fast, and I told her, I said, you have to eat, then you fast. What is it that takes you away from spending time with God? What is it that you need to let go of? My fast is television. I watch too much TV.
Right.
So I turn the television off, and I fast from the TV. What is it that's taking me away from Him, spending that time with God? And so I said, you fast from that. Well, she wrote me back in about, I think it was maybe about 20 minutes. And she said, you know what? I know what it is. I know what it is. She said, meat. I can eat vegetables and still take my medicine, and I will touch no meat. And I texted her back and said, wonderful. That's wonderful.
And
that's what we have to do. That thing that separates or keeps us from being where God would have us to be, put it aside. Put it away. And I'm to the point, I'm back to the point now of not watching. And I think I started watching, and not to put on any kind of sadness or anything, but I started watching television because my husband wasn't there anymore. So it was my company keeper. Instead of doing the work that I need to do, it just became my company keeper, another voice. So now I've gotten to the place when I started to fast, I don't even turn it on sometimes.
Oh, that's right. Our condolences. Your husband did pass away during the pandemic, didn't he?
Yes.
Hey, were you? I mean, what were the restrictions around the funeral or anything? Were you very limited in what you wanted to do or could do?
Yes, very limited, because, of course, I would love to have had my husband's service here at the church. But I knew that it would have been impossible to keep the numbers down the way that we needed to keep the numbers down. So we held it at the funeral home, and 10 people at a time were permitted to come in and to go out. And we did everything in one day. Then the next day, because my husband loved the cemetery of the Alleghenies. Well, he loved it when he was in the service.
Yeah.
He was a soldier to his heart. And so that's where we had him laid to rest, and we weren't even allowed to get out of our cars. We could only go. It was only a few cars could come, and we just sat there in our car.
Mm-hmm.
So it was tough.
Wow.
You know, it was tough, but, you know, it was not what I know that I felt he deserved. My husband wasn't for all that. So probably he fixed it so he would go during the pandemic so that he wouldn't have all that. He said, "You'll want all that stuff, and I don't want it."
Well, he must have been special to the Lord that God would rearrange the whole world so that we would all be shut down. You know, Earlene, obviously we're facing every election is important, and you know, you said, you know, you told your members you have to speak out for truth, and you know, what comments could you make as people are considering, you know, going to the polls at 6 weeks till the election? What do you say, you know, in light of current events, in light of your experience in McKeesport as a pastor, as a woman of color? Just make some pastoral or even personal comments to those who are right now, you know, preparing to vote early or in November.
Well, one of the things that I've said to my congregation is educate yourself. Make an educated decision. And I said that we are watching our democracy be eaten away. And that's who we are. We were built on that. That's how we have survived. But we're watching it slowly being taken away. I said, is that what you want? I said, everyone has a choice, and you have the right to your choice. But make an educated choice. You need to look and listen. Don't take what somebody else says, but you need to listen to what's being said. You need to listen to what's being done, and you need to be able to make an educated decision. Don't make a decision being angry. Yes, we have suffered the George Floyd, and we've suffered the Anton Roses. We've suffered that. No, we don't want to see any more of it, but we've suffered that. Now stand still and see what you can do, and allow the Lord to do through you to stop these things from happening. I said, but the one thing that it causes me to have this feeling inside of me that is frightening, to think that we would no longer have the democracy that I've lived under for 72 years. It may be flawed. It may be flawed, yes. But we're the humans that's running it, so the flaws come from us. Because I think when the forefathers created it, they created it with God speaking. But we have put some flaws in some of the things that are there. Some of the things that were written back then weren't the right things, but there was humans in it, mixed in it. I said, but we still need the guidelines to be able to live by. I live by the Bible, but I don't live in the Bible. I still live in this world. I still live in this country. So in this country, there still needs to be guidelines. I don't want to live under a dictator. That's not the kind of life. I just watched a week ago the group from Pittsburgh that went over to Auschwitz and watched that, and nobody wants to live under that. They showed them going to all of the different sites. The worst thing I saw was when they showed in the museum all those shoes left from all the people that were killed. I said, if we don't have a democracy, that leaves someone the right to be able to do that. I said, do you even look back and see those things to understand that this is the reason why we want to continue to live with our Constitution? And I said, you've got to stop just looking at the people that make fun and make jokes out of all of it, but actually look at, I'm not telling you to just look at CNN or MSNBC, but look at Fox, look at everything, so you can make a truthful decision. Because you've heard every side.
Yeah. Yeah, and people still say there's going to be subjectivity when they process that. You know, I told the story on Facebook Live, and Howard Thurman's book, you know, Jesus and the Disinherited, he talked about his grandmother who was a freed slave, and he said he would read the Bible to her, but he couldn't read Paul. because Paul's letters were used to bombard her of the correctness of slavery. So, you know, she just couldn't relate to that because of the experience that she had. And so, you know, I guess the point I was trying to make is like you were saying, as you process all that information, people are going to react and respond to it differently. And that's why, you know, I've been appealing that we need to, in the midst of it all, maintain our unity as brothers and sisters, and not make it a litmus test of anything. You know, so it's just a very difficult time. I've been very burdened, and of course, I've tried to give my life to, you know, to walking out relationships of people that didn't look and think like me, and God has given me, you know, some opportunities to do that. And so I'm praying that we pray, we educate, we vote, and then we trust God. And then we get on with the work that God has given us to do. And your work in the community, regardless of who's in the White House, a party in person may be more helpful, but we still have work to do regardless of who is there. And you certainly have carried on the work over the years in good times and in bad, and we can really learn so much from you and from your wonderful congregation. Now, we've got about 10 minutes, and I'm holding this little book in my hand called God Will Do It by Earlene Coleman. When you say you can't, it says on the back cover, God says you can. When you say you won't, God says you will. When you say you shouldn't, God says you should. Earlene Coleman, talk to us about the book, what's in it, and any of the lessons you'd like to highlight for the people who are listening.
In the book is the testimony of a little girl who felt that she was unloved, not liked. Probably not all of that is not in the book. I've thought things through even more because of the book. And just growing up and thinking that I can't, and then God says I could, you know. And when there were things that I thought that I shouldn't do, then God says, oh, you should. And him putting people in my life that when I wouldn't do, he caused them to be there to make me do. And I don't mean make me in it. You know, it was just their friendship, their relationship that caused me to move forward and do what God has said for me to do. So one of the lessons that I've learned is to embrace every person you meet. Because you don't know what God has put them in your life for. Yes, you may, and someone may be thinking, well, it may be a really bad person, and you're saying embrace. I'm not saying embrace into the part where you just mindlessly go with them, but embrace them to see where they fit in your life, because even someone that's bad in your life is teaching you a lesson. They're showing you. One of the things that I've had to learn as a pastor, and a pastor of a pretty large congregation, there are so many different characteristics and attitudes and situations that you have to deal with, so you have to learn how to deal with each and every person where they are. Well, those are those comes from the experiences that we've had in life with different people that we actually took the time. I take the time. I don't care who it is. Some people will walk past someone that's just sitting there and they look like they're a street person. Okay, so I don't know how your life got there. Me taking the time to one woman that a lot of people were ignoring, didn't want to talk to, didn't want to be bothered with, I found out she was a teacher. But because of health problems, she went bankrupt and lost everything. That's why she was in the street. She did make a choice to do it. But her bills from the medical bills took everything. But I learned a lesson. Don't make judgments about. So my book taught me to open myself up, look at yourself in this book, and I believe that I really need to write further with the book because it caused even me to look at where I was, the things I went through. I freely... now, since writing the book, I freely talk about my first marriage, becoming pregnant at 15 years old. But looking at this person that was 15 and pregnant, and, of course, in that day and age, your parents made you get married. And I got married. You know, and it ended up teaching me that I can't look down on anybody because look at where I am now from that time. It's all God. It's all God. God pushing me. God beneath, being the wind beneath my wings, making me fly when I didn't want to because I didn't think I was worthy. And it has nothing to do with my worth. That's another lesson I learned. Has nothing to do with my worth, but it has everything to do with God's wisdom.
Yeah, and it really is a fascinating story of you know, that you tell very well. I thoroughly enjoyed learning more about you, came to appreciate you even more. You know, and I think I know we as pastors, you know, we don't always want to share some of the journey, you know, that wasn't, you know, everything that we would want it to be. But it certainly does not diminish your story. I think it only increases the impact of it. And the lesson could be somebody reads it, says, well, if God did that for her and with her, he could do the same for me. And I think that would be the one thing that you would want anybody to conclude when they read it. I gotta ask you. I always ask you this at the time. It just. I mean, and you're gifted. You are. And our listeners, I gotta tell you, this woman can preach. She and Barbara Gunn can bring it. They can preach. I have recommended them in certain situations where people were looking for somebody. But have you received much pushback? Did you expect to receive much pushback being a woman and becoming a pastor and going into ministry?
In the beginning, I'm thankful for the pastor that I had, Pastor Aubrey Swan. He sat down and talked to us and told us that there are those places that you would go, and they would not receive you because you're a female, places that you would go that, you know, they would not permit you in their pulpit. And so then I asked him the question, you know, I still say it's kind of a dumb question, but it was, I asked him, I said, well, okay, Reverend Swan, if they say I can't stand in a pulpit and I have to stand down on the floor, I said, but it's still the same word, right? No matter where I'm standing. And he looked at me and laughed and said, yeah, you're right, Arlene, it doesn't matter. So I think sometimes when I went places, when I felt that God kind of shielded me from it, to be able to, you know, to sense it. But then I have to back up and say that I have to give some credit and kudos to a Pastor Barbara Gunn who went before me. And so it wasn't quite as hard or harsh when I went. And then to have the pastor that I had, as I said, Reverend Swan, he was invited to a church to preach in. Not being from here, he was from D.C., he was taking a few of us, which we always went with him. And so when we got there, the preacher, the pastor said to him, I know, and we weren't even planning on going in a pulpit, but he pulled them to the side and told him, he said, you know, you can go up in a pulpit, but those females will have to sit on the front pew. He said, they can't go up in a pulpit. I don't allow them in the pulpit. And so Reverend Swan told him, he said, you know what, I'm here, and you've asked me to preach, and so I'm not going to cause a problem. I'm going to preach. He said, but don't ask me to come back again, because where my female preachers are not allowed, I don't want to be. And we stood there and heard him say that.
Yeah. Yeah, so he ran some interference for you. You know, I think I told you a story. I went down to Colombia, South America. I was doing work down there many years ago, and there was a pastor and his wife. His wife was an American, but she had a master's in health, and she was down there, spoke impeccable Spanish. People loved her. She taught. She led. He said, I'd like you to participate in her ordination. Well, you know, my organization said no women were to be ordained. And you know, so now I said, give me a day. I said, let me just think about this. So I just sought the Lord. And I came to the conclusion that the only reason that I would not participate was that she was a woman. And I determined that was not a good enough reason. And the reason I say that is because God had gifted her. The people loved her. She performed, you know, God had put the gifts in her. And so I did participate, and I took an offering for Sita's first offering than anybody had ever taken for. Well, about 2 or 3 years later, her husband was literally assassinated. This would have been 1995. Mm-hmm. And she has led that work for the last 25 years. And I often think, who was I, like Peter would have told them in Acts 11, who was I to think that I could withstand God? That if he had chosen this woman to lead, and he knew she was a woman, why could I stand there and say, well, no, this isn't right? And so we've during the pandemic, I've reconnected with her. I'm supporting that ministry again on a monthly basis. And she's one of the finest leaders, not the finest woman leaders. She is one of the finest leaders. And I would say the same thing about you. It's not a matter of gender. It's about gifting and effectiveness. And on that basis, I would endorse, you know, and stand behind you and Pastor Barbara and any of the other sisters that I've met who God has called. And my job is not to judge what he's done. My job is to cooperate with it. And so it is an honor to do so. I got to ask you as we close, we just got a couple minutes to, I mean, you're in the church that you were raised in. I mean, this is just, you know, nobody could put up with me for that long. You know, here you are your entire life and you're there. What's that mean to you? What's that like for you to be where a place where you went as a child?
Well, it's great lessons, because I used to wonder why churches didn't call a person from inside when they had preachers that were right there and they would go other places. But I understand because relationships have to change. Mindsets have to change, because when, as an associate minister here and as a member here, I was always very much in women's ministry. But I had to end up explaining to the women when I stepped away, still apart, but not in the fashion that I was before, that I'm not walking away from you, but I cannot look like I have a church that's just directed towards females. I have males that I'm pastor to. So that relationship had to be worked out. The young adults that I had a Bible study that they had asked me to do for them, and I had asked permission from Reverend Swan, and I was teaching it. But then I told them, now we have to have one Bible study. So they weren't happy with me for a while. Some of the older people who had known me for a long time would look at me and they'd say, well, I don't know how to call you pastor or reverend. I said, Indian, you don't have to. You don't have to. You know, I'm not going to force that, you know, but all things begin to turn around. But it took time. It took some time. But I had to allow God to fix my heart to see you can't cause them to change overnight. They've been looking at you grow up all your life. Some of them are probably remembering that you are the young girl that got pregnant at 15. So they have to find their way around that. And then two of the members who were really staunch about it and against it came to me eventually and said, well, you know, the reason why I was there was because I didn't think you could handle it. And I said, and I can't. And they looked at me and said, what? I said, I can't. I said, but God can through me. And they both hugged me and said they were sorry. And that I said, there's nothing to be sorry about. You had a right to your opinion.
Yeah, and that's such a good point, you know, that, you know, and I've experienced on a very small scale, but people knew me as a church administrator. And then when I became more of a pulpit pastor, they still thought of me as the administrator. It was very difficult for them to make that transition. And it's a real credit, certainly to the Holy Spirit who changed the hearts of the people, but the fact that they were willing to change and adjust. And I think
hello?
Yes, we did, but what good timing.
For a few minutes, I lost you. I didn't hear anything.
There we go. Well, it was all good stuff. And so, but
okay. Yep, you're gone again.
Okay, well, I'm not touching.
You keep going in and out.